It's nice to be back in the studio together.
The band is back together, as you said.
As I put in the show doc.
I wanted to know where you were going to go with that.
Well, I mean, the last two shows were kind of removed from each other. We went and we did the audio that we reviewed from East Bay Board Game Convention, and then we had Gen Con, and it just wasn't the core Misplay format.
Experience.
Design. Structure.
Systems.
Business. We got there.
We're back in the studio.
Such that it is right before the beginning of the school year.
$1,700, it's going to look a lot nicer.
Did you buy your gaming table?
I think I'm going to go the other way. I think I'm going to put neoprene mat down and then just buy nice cameras.
For the same cost as a table?
Yes. Are you going to split it? We need two cameras. We need two identical cameras.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we aggress into a territory in poor turn order positioning, playing Eschaton. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. I have no idea what you meant. I read that sentence and I was like, he's going to bungle that so bad trying to read it. Like, I couldn't read that.
Remember how when we were talking about Dating Game, we were talking about Star-Crossed Realms because it was a mashup of two games that are kind of loved within the Misplay circle?
Yes.
Eschaton is a little bit of a mashup of Star Realms or Dominion, depending on how you want to look at it, and something like 8-Minute Empire. There's a map control portion where you're developing pieces on a map to compete for territory, and you're doing this cool like deck building stuff on the side, which then allows you to put your armies on the map and give them the ability to go move and attack and do all the other things. Game was sick. The theme is amazing. And it stood out for kind of the gameplay reasons. It stood out for having a lot of the components and features of a game that I enjoy. And since I had an eye on product design, since I was looking at manufacturers all Gen Con weekend, the game really grabbed my attention in the way that it's visually designed.
How many copies did you buy?
I have one in a shopping cart on their website.
You got to support? You got to support? Mark, how do you be in the position you are and not purchase that game?
I didn't have enough room in the suitcase that you let me borrow to bring it back.
Let's talk about Gen Con. Welcome back.
It's nice to be home.
I don't even know how to start. I really don't. And I know we're a couple weeks removed from Gen Con right now, and I wasn't there.
It was a loss for the show. A big loss.
I worked for 364 days to be there. And the day before Gen Con, the day before I was going to fly on Wednesday. On Tuesday, I tested positive for COVID. I was shattered. I've put it in perspective. If that is the biggest problem I have in my life, I'm doing pretty good. And it still, though, felt really bad that I wasn't able to go because I was not going to show up. I know that according to the CDC, you can put on a mask and you will protect people, I guess. I don't know. But for me, I couldn't go. I couldn't be there in a room with people, especially sharing a hotel room, knowing that I was testing positive. I didn't have symptoms. I felt good, but I wasn't able to go. And it wasn't a hard decision. It was just agonizing. It was like, we worked so hard to be there. The good news is the Misplay was in the first exposure playtest hall. We were there. The bad news was I wasn't, but you were there. You took on a lot. You took my suitcase that I had packed up, had the banner in it. It had the copies of the games in it. It had our marketing materials. Mark took it all. He went to Gen Con. He went to Indianapolis and he playtested the game in the first exposure playtest hall. And he did it all by himself. I put a lot on you that I mean, it's not like, not like I did it, but a lot fell to you and you stepped up and you were able to be there. And you're going to tell me all about it because when you came back, you went directly to Japan So we haven't talked a lot.
It's been a minute. I'm just going to keep coming back to it's nice to be home. And for what it's worth, I, one, empathize deeply with your situation, having missed a very important trip to myself due to catching COVID like 2 days before I was supposed to fly. And two, I also really respect the kind of the ethics of the decision to not go, because I think it would be very easy to sit in that same chair, be like, I don't have symptoms, I'm testing positive, no one says I can't go, and so I'll still go. And so I very much respect the decision to miss something that you had worked so hard for the whole year in consideration and in protection of other people's health.
I appreciate that. I mean, it does to some degree make me feel a little bit better. I appreciate that because that's how I saw it. And I appreciate that other people see that as well. So Mark was at Gen Con. I was busy. I was working from home. I had the time. And I have been doing a number of things that I'm going to talk about really quickly. We'll get to the Gen Con in where are we? I have been doing a number of things. The first thing I did was I signed us up for the two-player contest at Board Game Geek. I submitted Currents, which is the abstract game we've been talking about that Mark took to Gen Con. I submitted Currents to its first contest. I'm not trying to win the contest. One of the really good outcomes already of having listed the game in the Board Game Geek thread where you submit your game is getting feedback, having people look at the rules and ask questions. And somebody's already done that. They haven't played the game yet, but they asked a question. They had like a number of questions that they saw from looking at the game and looking at the rules. And that's great. We need to learn how to answer those questions and learn how to better explain our game. I want to shout out Scott, who took the time and totally redid the UI of our game in playing cards so that it looks good for the contest. It looks really sharp when you go into playing cards right now. It looks really good. If you're in our Discord, if you follow us on Blue Sky, there's links. I don't normally do it. I'll put a link in the show notes. You can go play our game and give us feedback. There's a button in there. When you're done playing, you can click and give us feedback. That was number one. Number two is we signed up for the online Protospiel. And I should give them a shout out, actually, because they have given us a sponsorship. And I think that's a really cool program. Other people, when they have signed up, said, hey, you know, I have the disposable income. I'm willing to sponsor somebody to come and have their game play tested. And so we benefited from that. And we had somebody sponsor us, and we're going to be there. The Protospiel Online is a virtual board game testing convention, and it runs from Friday, August 22nd to Sunday, August 24th. We're signed up. Our game is on the list. People are going to be able to come in and play test our game, give us feedback. I'm going to get practice talking about the game to people, something you got a lot of practice at Indie, and I'm looking forward to doing that. And the last thing I will say that I had been working on happened. I wasn't even the driver of this. So one of our listeners and active Discord users is Greg Poole. And Greg has been playtesting his game with the Golden Gate Game Makers, just like we have been playtesting our game with the Golden Gate Game Makers. Greg in Santa Clara, us in San Francisco. Greg had reached out to us on Discord and said, oh, wouldn't it be cool if the Golden Gate Game Makers had an online virtual playtesting day? I was like, oh, that's a really cool idea. We need something catchy, like the last Monday. 2 hours later, it exists. Greg took the initiative. He talked to the Golden Gate Game Makers. And on the last Monday, maybe of every month, we're going to be doing some virtual online playtesting with the Golden Gate Game Makers. So I feel like a lot has happened in the last 2 weeks that I need a better calendar system to keep track of this all.
It's funny. I was like hopping in and out of Discord while I was traveling in Japan and just seeing like online Protospiel, Golden Gate meetups, playingcards.io sponsorship, Board Game Geek competition, made friends with this guy, made friends with that guy. We got a game sent to us by another designer that I've been talking to. You've been a busy boy.
I didn't even get to that yet. Bones and Banners. I can't wait to play that game. Yeah, there's so much.
Makes me feel like I haven't been doing a lot.
You did a lot.
You've been really focused on some business things.
Systems.
I've really come back to looking at the game in through different lenses. So I have a little game for you.
You brought a game?
I brought a game for you.
I'm the fun guy on the show.
We'll see if it sounds fun after.
Mark is looking through a small notebook right now. He's got like his diary.
All right. It is my journal. I'm going to try to come up with, we're playing, is it categories? I'm going to describe the category and you have to give me the umbrella term. Entropic array.
Words I don't even know.
Startography. Constellations.
Stars. Do I have to guess like immediately or do I wait till the end? Constellations.
You're getting there. Startographer.
Space.
Charting stars. And among the stars.
What would be great movie titles?
Good try. Think about our game.
Some 41 songs.
Ooh. I don't think so. But I'm not super familiar with their discography.
Potential themes for our game.
Nailed it.
Yes.
What is the overarching potential theme of our little list? You win. Good job.
Great. I love games. That's how we got here. So you said you weren't sure you were doing a lot. You came up with a game. We're going to talk about all of the things that you did in Indianapolis at Gen Con right after this. Today's episode is sponsored by PlayingCards.io. PlayingCards.io lets you create online rooms to play games, learn, and hang out with friends. Thanks to our new premium account from Playing Cards, you can now play Currents online, the same game that we've been talking about, that Mark brought to the first exposure playtest hall. It runs smoothly, the rules are built in, and you can teach yourself to play in just a few minutes. And afterwards, we'd love your feedback. There's a button inside. You can find the link to play Currents in our Discord and in the show notes. The game was designed entirely in Playing Cards, a platform that we have used regularly for over a year. You've seen pictures on Blue Sky and in our Discord. You've heard us talk about it. PlayingCards.io recently provided us with a complimentary account, and we are genuinely grateful. Need a user-friendly, fast way to get a prototype moving? Check them out at PlayingCards.io. Where are we?
I've lost this race like 3 or 4 times in a row now. I'm really going to have to up my game on knowing the show format. I guess we have to start with a goodbye. We're saying goodbye to summer. We've said hello and goodbye to Gen Con. We are also wrapping up our Unpub mentorship time with our mentor, Fernando Gonzalez.
Yes, this was a program that, if you're unfamiliar with Unpub, Unpub is short for Unpublished Games Network. And it's a nonprofit organization serving the tabletop community to build better games through playtesting events, mentorship, and education programs. I really think, Mark, this is an area where I would love for us to be in a position 5 years from now where we could be a mentor, right? Where we could offer some advice. I mean, I think that is to some degree the idea of the show, is that we're learning how to do this and sharing it. Fernando was also a teacher, so he teaches about board games, and we were lucky to have him come and work with us for about 10 weeks. He came to our Wednesday meetings. I love that he just jumped right into the game. I think within the first 5 minutes of meeting him and explaining what we were doing, he was like, let's play. That was a way that he felt like he understood where we were at by just playing what we were creating. Today was our last meeting with him. I really appreciated his support and his advice for those 10 weeks. A lot of questions that I had that were really bothering me, I brought to him and I said, oh, this is my issue. Like, how do I get past this? As great as it is to have Mark and our whole team, I think it's really helpful to have somebody who's been in the industry for a while, has created and published games, offer some advice and suggestions. And, you know, a lot of the things that, and there's a few things in the game that exist because of his advice?
In reflecting on the time that we spent working with Fernando, I think you identified it really clearly today when we were saying our goodbyes, that you're like, oh, I really wanted you to just come in and tell us, give up on this game, it's not worth it.
I really did.
But I think to Fernando's credit as a mentor, as a teacher, he did not put himself in a role of designing the game for us, but in always kind of guiding us back to, well, play, try something else. He had some good framework things for how to approach making the game better and how to make changes. He suggested remove things from the game as the first step to solving a problem. And if removing didn't work, then you try to change something to make something work. And if those two things fail, then you're allowed to add something. I think it's really easy to get into the mindset of, oh, well, we'll just keep adding and adding and adding and adding and adding, and sooner or later, Currents is a 25 by 25 grid with 17 colors and is very expensive to make.
Mark's tugging at all my pain points.
But it was in that kind of consistent guidance to take the idea, play with it, see how the team responds to it, see what we think about it, and then make some decisions about whether or not those changes are worth keeping or trying a different variation of. It felt very much like the kind of teaching that we aspire towards, where you want to guide the learner to the discovery themselves once they have the toolkit. I think Fernando gave us tools that we could use that developed our skill sets as game designers and then brought us along the way to apply those skills to develop the game to where it is currently.
So I think we both highly recommend, if you are a game designer out there and you're listening, check out the Unpub mentorship program at unpub.org. Totally worth it. Gen Con.
First exposure playtest hall.
Yeah, let's start there. Let me start by taking full credit, because it was me a year ago who was just wandering around Gen Con. I was like, I don't have anything to do. I'm just going to walk into all of, because it's massive and there's all these extra rooms. I didn't know what was part of Gen Con and what wasn't. And I'm just walking in and out of all of these rooms, and you know, there's a game publisher, there's 50 people playing a tabletop role-playing game. How do you get a room? I didn't know anything. I still don't. And I walked into this room and there were all these prototypes. They were unfinished games. And Long Pack was there and Panda was there. These are board game manufacturers. And I was like, what is happening here? So I went up and I asked and I said, what is this room? And they explained to me what the first exposure playtest hall was. And before I left that room, I texted you and Mike and I said, we got to be there. This is our goal. 1 year from today, I want to be in this hall. Technically, we were. You were there.
We'll run it back next year. Trick-taking game for tricksters.
No, Tender Mercenaries.
Tender Mercenaries. Let's go.
They smash nightmares.
Tender Mercenaries?
Yeah.
Probably. So Thursday morning, I walk into the main room for the first exposure playtest hall. And immediately to your left, there is a check-in and registration table. And then to your right, along the wall, are all of the manufacturer tables. I went and checked in, found out what table we were going to be at, set up, tried to take some artsy pictures for the show, sent them to Discord. But there were tables laid out kind of just in rows, and tables just kind of went back. So it was just a nice little array of tables where they were numbered and you would post up with whatever signage you had. You'd have your game set up and then you would wait. And then they would start filing people into the tables that they were going to play at. And then you would get to start your playtest once your table was full with their players.
What level of nerves did you have going into that? Because I would have been nervous, even though I worked for a long time on memorizing my script and what I was going to say. Did you have nerves?
I was a little bit nervous, but I mean, I like to teach things. And so teaching is in my wheelhouse. I was like, all right, put on the teacher hat, do the teach, answer questions. I think the script, or kind of the pitch of ourselves, is probably the part that I was the least confident in, but I practiced it over time and it got better over the weekend.
And that's where like the buddy system would have been great, because for me, I think that's a strength. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I've said I'm sorry to you so many times.
I found a good rhythm. I would introduce myself, met the players, gave a little pitch about we're the Misplay, we're building this game, here's what we're trying to do, here's where we're trying to go, and here's the game, let's go into the teach. And then, so from teach to play, it took about 5 minutes to teach the game, and then players got to spend the next 40 minutes playing 3 to 5 games. Which leads to the first hiccup. We were scheduled for 2 hours of playtesting, right? We would kind of hit 45 minutes from 5 minutes of teaching, 40 minutes of players getting to play with the rule set, and then like some like thumb twiddling, because they were engaged and all the players were really nice and had constructive and helpful and kind things to say about the game. But I'm going to say I'll hit my panic button a little bit, because I was like, well, we have an hour and 15 minutes left. What else can we do? And so I pitched an alternate rule set to the first group because I wanted to just get more playtime with them. So I offered a variant rule set where the only change in the rules was I changed gray tiles. So we tried a variant where gray could pull a tile instead of stacking or placing. Kind of the unfortunate byproduct of that is it made the quantitative data that we were looking to take in the feedback forms murkier, less clear, less specific to an individual rule set, but still yielded like interesting qualitative data, which I think, barring not having the forethought to say, oh, here's a feedback form for the first version, here's a feedback form for the second version, please fill out both, you get kind of this aggregate qualitative assumed comparison.
Yeah, I think we always knew that we were going to have a bit of time. We even talked before previously about having an A and a B version of the game, where we might swap the players. You're teaching one version of the game, and then I teach another version of the game, and then we swap the players. We talked about doing something like that. We also talked about having the microphones at the table to maybe get some interviews and some audio for the podcast from people who had played our game. And I think with just me not being there, it's a lot for one person to try to juggle and do. And I will say, Mark did a really good job of explaining why he kind of had maybe some conflicting data in the feedback forms, because when I found out that, having been the person who created the feedback form, I knew that you couldn't give this feedback form to somebody who had played two versions of the game, because the questions weren't phrased in a way to get valuable feedback from them. And so when I found out Mark had done that, I was like, oh my goodness, what is going on? It totally makes sense from Mark's standpoint why he did that. It does make the feedback forms that I had created to be filled out a little murky. Not entirely. You did this throughout the weekend. One of the things that you kind of broke it down by days and by group, what the engagement rating was. One of the questions on the feedback form was, how engaging did you find the game from 1 to 5?
I think the spread was, in group one, there were 3 fours and a 3. In group two, there were 3 fours and a 5. And in group three, there were 4 fours. We had 4 playtesters in each of the groups. The interesting piece to me, if you're looking at just kind of the individual data points, is even the player that rated the game at 3 put on their player profile form that this is their least favorite kind of game. And so they were like, I usually really dislike this kind of game, but I found it this engaging and was willing to play and had ideas. And in my estimation, engaged with the game and the feedback in a way that indicated higher engagement than I would have expected for somebody that sat down and was like, I don't want to play a 2-player abstract game for 15 minutes, let alone 45.
That's fair. I don't know if I had true expectations of how people would fill out the forms. You know, you have your pie in the sky. You want everybody to write on it, this was a 5. This was amazing. Here's my money.
I think my pie in the sky is much different and much lower.
What is your pie in the sky?
My pie in the sky would be everybody writing kind of like a very rich, thorough debrief of their experience. Now, we didn't phrase the questions that way because we didn't want to make people feel like they were laboring over the feedback sheet. But there is a difference in the players that took time to like write suggestions of different rules, draw different things to help outline problems with the visual aids or ways to design the board to make the visual embedding better. I would have liked more of that from everybody, whereas there were people who just saw feedback form, circle, 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 done. That's like that's the fail case to me.
Sure. We like different pie. That's fine. I totally understand that, and I agree with it. that was one of our goals. We talked about before Gen Con, when you were at the East Bay Board Game Convention, we talked about how valuable feedback was and how to weight it. You know, we created the form. We're not experts. You were the one who gave the form to people. How did we do? What was something you thought was good on the form? And what was something you think we should have changed on the form?
I think we should have had more short form answer. I think you do one Likert scale kind of thing instead of three and have more short answer opportunity. Have it be the expectation on the thing and let people say, I didn't have anything, but design the form in a way that encourages people to write a little bit more. And I think I would have gone back, and if we had had more time and if I got the do-over, I think I would have looked to find more specific questions to ask than what we asked.
That was two things you would change. What's the one thing you like?
Oh, sorry.
You got to sandwich it, my man.
Not in ABA land.
You don't sandwich things in behavior land?
Mm-mm. I mean, given what I would change, my favorite part of the form is the asking for any more thoughts, feedbacks, or considerations. I think that's where the most thoughtful feedback came from.
Do you think that it could have been more dense by design? We created one where when we gave it to somebody, we didn't want them to feel overwhelmed. There's a lot online, if you're looking for examples, where like, really? 20 questions you're like, did you find we could have dived a little deeper?
I think you could have done something like share your thoughts about the three tile mechanics instead of asking, was it balanced? And have a spot for each color.
I'm nodding my head for the podcast audience. Yeah.
So it would be changes like that. I think if I could go back and redo the question about knowing the opponent's pattern, I would say, what was your basic strategy while you played the game? And you would get the people that were like, well, I was trying to figure out what my partner had, and then I was playing so that I didn't arrange the shapes that I thought they had. Or you would get, I was just trying to build my shape as quickly as possible with the volume of pieces that was most available.
And, you know, the reason I asked the question is because, like, everything we're doing, not only as podcasters and board game designers, but also as teachers in life, you want to figure out how to do it better. Like, and it's okay to say, what didn't I do well? And how can I make it better next time I do it? I like that feedback.
Well, because we have next time coming up, right? We have online Protospiel. We're going to have Golden Gate Game Maker meetup. So bringing a refined feedback form.
Well, right now, when you go to the playing cards room, there's a button in there that says feedback. It's the exact same form that you had in the first exposure playtest hall. I can tweak it now. I can make some of the changes that you're talking about in the form for our next set of playtests. We have to jump ahead a little bit because we're a bi-weekly podcast. And, you know, we're trying to do 30 to 40 minute episodes. And while I'm going to pick Mark's brain and Mark's going to talk about it at some point in a future newsletter or on the blog or on the website, what did you feel you learned about our game from running the playtests?
For me, I think there were three things that I walked away from wanting to explore more deeply in the game. There were some specific comments about the difference in patterns and like how difficult or easy some patterns were to make in comparison to others. There was a lot of hate for the long bar. I would love to, as a team, kind of spend more time, and I know how carefully I'm so bad designed the sets that we're playing with right now, but I would love to explore what other pattern options could be available to us in terms of what the shapes are.
I'm giving Mark this look. I'm giving Mark this like really serious look right now across the table. Am I mad hearing that? No. Yes. Only because I think you know to a degree how much time I spent trying to figure out what is the shapes that should be on our pattern cards. We tested for a long time different types of shapes, starting with Tetris patterns when we're using Tetra shapes four. And then we moved into the Penta shapes five. And we had shapes that weren't as connected as they are now. They stretched out further. They were connected, but by their corners mostly. And then we moved into these pentominoes that we have now. There's part of me that just wants to be done with that piece of it and wants to say, I don't want to go back into that. But it's the wrong attitude, right? If there's something that needs adjustment, we should address it. We should talk about it. If people who are playtesting our game say, hey, I'm not sure about this, we should look into that if we hear it enough, right? We've talked about the weighted feedback. So that was number one.
Number two is finding what to do with the gray tiles. We've been struggling with them internally in terms of how they're balanced, in terms of I have a bone to pick with how some of the physical applications of how gray tiles have played. New players that we've presented the game to consistently at East Bay Board Game Convention and now at Gen Con and in other domains have kind of identified gray as outlier in a way that they find unsatisfying.
And I'm not mad hearing that one. That is something we've always, there's always been one tile. Blue tiles move other tiles orthogonally. Orange tiles move other tiles diagonally. That works really well. We've always loved that. But we've played around with what the third tile does. You know, does it remove a tile from the board completely? Does it swap places? Does it pull? Does it just plop down on top of something? We've played with that a lot. I don't think anyone is at a place where they are entirely happy.
And then the last piece for specifically working on the game is the shared pool. And I only bring it up because I think it's one of the things that we just haven't spent time on. And so I think it's worth exploring other opportunities just to eliminate other use cases to either confirm or find something better.
Hearing that, it is an area that very early on we said, let's do this shared pool where it's random. And we did before that try out some ideas where there were, you could just pick whatever tile you wanted. Let me ask you, you're coming back and you're telling me that. How weighted is that? So let's say you had 20 people playtest the game. How many people said, yeah, I don't, the shared pool, I don't know. That doesn't seem like the best way to get tiles, or there's something wrong with the shared pool.
No one explicitly said it. I don't weight it super. I don't think it was like glaring feedback the way that gray tile needs to change.
Okay.
But inferentially, there were, I think, a lot of misconceptions about how to play the game based on small sample size, unequal distribution of color. There were a handful of playtesters that were like, oh, well, and there was even one person who put on their feedback form, balance isn't dictated by what the tiles do. It's dictated by which color is most available at the beginning of the game.
And let me explain for the audience how the shared pool works right now. There are 33 tiles in a bag. And there's 11 of each color, blue, orange, and gray. And you randomly pull out 11 and place in the shared pool. It is possible that you're going to pull out 8 grays and then 2 blues and an orange. That's possible. That's what random is. And if that happens, I agree, the game doesn't play optimally. The game doesn't play optimally. Not the way we want the game to play. It's nice when it comes out relatively even, where it's, you know, 4-4 and 3. That's great. But that's not always going to be the case. And it does change the way the game gets played sometimes. But I think that's a good thing. I think it's good to have the variety. And if you play the game more than once, you're going to play the game in a different way. And there is like some average middle ground of the game where most games are like, you don't have a problem where there's too much of one tile to either start or end the game.
And if you survive the round, it balances out in the next one most of the time.
And I think it dictates how you have to play. I've played games where there are 8 grays, but the person I'm playing against is just like, well, I'll just put it here. I'll put the next gray tile next to it. That's dangerous. You need to start putting gray tiles away from other tiles so that I can't find a way to manipulate the board and win the game. Playing with fire. Okay.
The last piece for me kind of comes back to talking to and learning about manufacturing in terms of like what tiles could be made out of. You told me, go touch everything.
I did.
I hate to break it to you. I like touching the more expensive things. But there was one playtester who was like, in the question of theme, I think the last thing to come back to is to really look at the theme. If we're going to go with this current water theme.
And let me say, before you go on, this was a big part of my script. Explaining to the player, and I don't know if you, I'm going to ask, did you do that? Like, I was going to explain to them very clearly that we don't have a theme that we've settled on, that it could be an abstract game. It could have a theme. Here's one idea that we have. There's other ideas that we're thinking about. And even though that wasn't a question on the feedback form, which might have been errantly, it was going to be a big part of my informal discussions with people to capture their thoughts. So yeah, I go on.
I did bring it up in debrief with each of the playgroups. So I mentioned the water theme. I mentioned the original concept of like, oh, it's making schools of fish. And, you know, like a theme potpourri is going to hit with different players. One player was like, oh my gosh, if it was schools of fish, I would buy it right now. Another player was like, oh, I'm kind of getting like urban planning vibes from this game. And I was like, that is not what, as the designer, I'm just going to nix them. And then there's one player who was like, what if your game wasn't themed and you lean into the abstract realm and make the visual display of the game really beautiful? He was talking about a nice wood board, three different like colors, textures of wood, and you have just kind of this beautiful display.
And this is when I started getting pictures from Mark where I would estimate the cost of the game retail would be about $100.
And so with all of that in mind, and knowing that Jason feels very strongly about theming the game, as I spent all my time on the airplanes, I started playing around with, I did a little bit of the shapes work for you. I have a different set that I want to submit that probably doesn't meet the criteria that you and I'm so better playing with, but I think is a reasonable place to start. But I came to this idea of, I think we should be looking to make the visual aesthetic features of the game something that stands out about the game. And I think this like stargazing kind of theme could fit well with the game, has some interesting visual components, fits in with the patterns as like the tiles are stars, and could be something that looks really nice in the end state of the game.
This is going back to the game that we played earlier in the episode where you gave me all of the...
Correct.
Because you kind of just jumped the audience a little bit.
I jumped them.
One of the ideas that Mark has brought back is, you know, this theme of constellations and stars. And I think that would look really beautiful. I think we can find ways to make the tiles look like celestial objects. You talked about lifting up the grid at the end of the game and looking down at the board that's been built. And it might be, I don't want to say Instagram ready.
It's very satisfying to like pick up the grid, see just kind of the raw patterns laid out. I would take a picture.
Yeah. I mean, that could be a thing.
I think that wraps up what I take away from Gen Con in terms of what the game needs and where it needs to go. I think there's a lot more in some of the people that we made connections with. I think there's a lot more in the sample kits that I brought you from manufacturers. I think there's a lot more to go back and kind of study and debrief about. But in terms of where the game is, where I think the game goes, and what I think the game needs, we've covered the extent of that.
Here's what we haven't covered. We need to celebrate. We have been I've been sad because I didn't get to go. You have been traveling. We've been very busy. We've been doing lots of things, getting ready for the school year to start. We haven't celebrated, Mark. We haven't. Like, the fact that we were at the first exposure playtest hall with a game that we designed, doesn't that feel good?
It's very cool. I'll tell you one more story from a playtester that was not in the first exposure playtest hall.
This was somebody that playtested in the hotel?
Yes, when I was out with Mike C after hours one night.
And Mike C should celebrate as well. He was on the episode with you last week from Lucas Oil Stadium, just like we did last year, you and I. And he was in the first exposure playtest hall with a game that he designed as well. We should all be celebrating, but go on.
A game designer that we met in the hotel lobby after hours playtesting came by and was like, oh, sat down, shared a lot of information and wisdom about game design and his thinking and manufacturers and ways to playtest. and sat down, played the game a couple of times. I was like, oh, thanks so much for playing the game, and like started asking some feedback questions. And he was like, oh, let's play another couple of times, and voluntarily played a few more games, and then said, this is like, said that he would buy the game if we had a box to sell right now.
You should have just sold him the prototype, Mark. Just give it away, like a couple dollars. That's awesome, though. That's really cool to hear. Now that we're celebrating, because we should be proud of that. Like, that was a goal we worked for a year. We're not done with this project. The podcast goes on. We're not done with the game. But Mark, let me ask you this question, because I've asked you this question before. Are you a game designer?
I guess.
It's close. We're celebrating now. That's more than I thought you were going to say.
Next year, when our name is on the box.
Actually, we have to talk about that, because I thought we just put the misplay.
Oh, then never. The Misplay podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjoes, Brian Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors. It was the beginning of a whirlwind. It was a whirlwind in and of itself, and it ended in a whirlwind.
Okay. Go on, Dorothy.
We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. We're not in Indianapolis.
It was Indianapolis, yeah.
We're not in Indianapolis anymore, Toto.